That's
Well,
funny.
welcome, young man. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm excellent. Yeah. Very excited about life. So, my question for today, because I always shortcut it and use a few words, but your explanation of the naturopathic understanding of healing and crisis, healing crisis, and how to handle them, and what shows you the difference between a disease process and a release process, etc.
Okay. Well, I got the question, especially based on our conversation earlier this morning that you were looking for. And so let's start with Einstein. Or no, let's go to Max Planck. Max Planck is receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics. This goes back around 1900, over 100 years ago. And Max Planck says, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world, he says, is made of, maybe you can mute yourself, Patrick. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. So this human form, as we were just talking about, is designed to be fueled. Its power supply is love. And when we bring an energy in that's less than love, we bring in an energy that is disintegrative. In the ancient Aramaic language, the word that described bringing a disintegrative energy into the human form was the word sin. And sin is an archery term in Aramaic. And, you know, imagine yourself on the archery ranges and you pull back the bow and you fire at that bullseye and you miss the bullseye. What's going to happen is the scorekeeper is going to yell out sin, announcing that you've missed the mark. And that's all the word means. There's an energy that's off the mark relative to the human system. And then you go back and you hear them take it a step further and they say, the wages of sin is death. And I can remember being a kid and believing that, oh, I'm going to get punished for my sins. You know, the Creator's going to kill me because I sin. And nothing could be further from the truth. That's such a crazy thought system. But what was being shown us was that if you engage in a disintegrative energy, one that's not designed for this integrated energy field, then its integrated state starts to decay, it begins to fall apart, and ultimately it dies. That's all they were telling us, is engage in hate and fear and anger. We're designed to be fueled by love, and hate and fear and anger and sadness and grief and rage and pain and drama and trauma are all energies that will begin the disintegration of this energy system. And as Angie shared with us when she began her conversation, she remembers when she had some disintegrative energy going on and she was given a drug and just shut the whole thing down. She's now dealing several decades later with that energy expressing as a migraine in her head over an ear infection. She's now processing through. She's in a healing crisis. She's going back through and she's experiencing some of the actual word patterns. She's experiencing some of the thoughts, some of the physical sensations that happened to her when she was 5 years of age. So explaining that in naturopathic terms, we would say that what happened when that disintegrative energy went in, and then there was an anesthetic that shut the system down and introduced even more symptoms into her field, is it created a disease process that then became held to, locked in tissue, and resides there for until it's removed. Until the energy pattern is removed, it's going to remain in that tissue and create disintegration. From time to time, it will flare up as a painful symptom, the body yelling out saying, hey, notification, notification. There's an energy here that doesn't belong in me. And what do? When we get those kinds of pains? Well, let me run and get another drug. Let me run and get a fifth of scotch. Another very common drug, especially where there's emotional disintegration happening, is rage. It's a way to shut down and not feel those energies that don't belong in the system. So there's a term that's been created in the naturopathic system of medicine called a healing crisis. And in essence, what it says is those nested frequencies that have been put in the structure that are of a disintegrative nature, in order for healing to occur, they're going to have to come back out. And the presence of that disintegrative energy is what creates a symptom. Now, it doesn't matter whether the energy is going out or whether the energy is going in, the symptom's going to be identical. The healing process looks exactly the same as the disease process. The only difference is the energy going into the system or is the energy coming out of the system? When I become vital enough to heal, when I strengthen and I get reconnected to the power supply I'm designed for, the active presence of love, and I start moving in the direction of eating things that actually support me, I start throwing away the suppressive drug type things, sugar, caffeine, nicotine, junk food, foods that are processed are nothing but drugs. When I start throwing those things away, I'll start climbing the ladder of vitality. Now let's imagine we've got a vitality meter and it goes from 1 to 10. And I've got a set of symptoms that are a level 7. And I'm only at a level 5 vitality. And I say, oh, I want to handle those symptoms. I want to get through those symptoms. I want to handle those symptoms. I won't get to handle those symptoms in the next 100 years unless I do what it takes to get me to a level of vitality that is higher than that level 7. So at a level 5 vitality, my structure will hold on to those level 7 toxins, because if they were to break loose, literally they could be life-threatening because I don't have the vitality to process through them. As I do my work, as I strengthen, as I correct and eat things that are actual food, and many people are shocked that food actually comes from the ground. When I eat things that actually nurture and nourish my form and strengthen me, I build, and I build strength, and I build strength. As I let go of the rages and the fears piece by piece by piece, I let go of that which weighed me down, and now I am lifted up. When I hit the level of, 7.5 in vitality, all hell is going to tend to break loose in me. Because now that I can handle those disintegrative energies, those nested frequencies that never belonged in me, my system wants to move through them and let them go. And as they start to go, I'm going to experience the energies that came in and created the disease process as being removed from my structure, and I'm going to create them exactly as I experience them on the way into my structure. And so as I do that, on a physical level, healing is going to look like any kind of physical symptom that I have ever had. And because I'm moving energy on a gross level, a mass amount of energy on a gross level in that healing process, my structure says, and now I'm going to lay you down and you're going to be still and you're going to rest while you go through this. And so it's going to be any kind of physical symptom I've ever had and low energy. The energy is being used inside of me to take apart the toxicity, to detoxify it, to throw it off, and to restructure the tissue in a healthy way, literally rebuilding what has been, we could say, broken by the presence of the disintegrative energy. And that takes a lot of power. That takes a lot of energy. So that's what happens on a physical level. On a mental level, it's going to be any kind of negative thought that I've ever had and confusion. Because what I'm going to be doing is taking in the presence of love, which has a certain way of thinking, I'm going to be bringing up some of those old hostility and fear-based thoughts. And when those two things meet in my mind, their meeting creates confusion. Now, I'll use an example of, you know, imagine I'm up there with my whiteboard and I project a red light, a blue light, and a green light on the whiteboard. And we see distinctly there's a red circle, a blue circle, and a green circle. Now, we know scientifically that there's no such thing as red, blue, or green. They're interpretations of the brain. That's why some people are colorblind, because they don't have the same interpretations as other people. All red, blue, and green are frequencies. And I have clarity on red, blue, and green when I have those spots on the board. But if I converge them into one spot, red, blue, and green, what do I get? I get a mix of those three colors. I don't get clarity on any one of them. I have a mix because those frequencies are additive and subtractive in nature. They create interference patterns. And so I get some muddy mix that we would call confusion. When I'm taking old hostility and fear-based thoughts and processing them out through my mind, and I'm bringing in love-based thoughts, and those two energies meet and mix, the mix is called confusion. I'm going to go through a stage of a lack of clarity in my healing process. That's where it's so important to have someone there to support you, clarifying your mind, your thinking processes, so that you can clean out the old hostility and fear-based stuff. And sometimes those hostility and fear-based things might be 10 generations old, thoughts that I've never thought in my life, and all of a sudden, here they are coming forward. That's part of the healing process, is recapturing that and literally cleaning that out of my genes. So that's what happens on a mental level. And then the third level is emotional. And on the emotional level, things like any kind of negative thought I've ever had and depression. If I'm bringing in the vitalizing power of active love and there are negative thoughts, that's going to add to the confusion. And I have to breathe and just do my work through it and process through the release of those negative emotional energies. So it's going to be confusion and it's going to look like depression. And so if I recognize myself in a healing crisis, I want to make sure that I keep doing the right things and I stay on track and I do what it takes to maintain my vitality. A lot of times people will get into a healing crisis. It isn't Dr. Feelgood to do it. And they'll run for their drug of choice and they'll shut the whole opportunity down. So I want to make sure I stay on track. So the question becomes, how do I tell when I'm in the midst of all these symptoms, whether I'm in a healing process or I'm in a disease process? Well, there are four things you can check. And if your answer is yes, if you put a tick on each of these issues, then you'll know that you're in a healing process when you're symptomatic. It's not time to run for another drug. So the first thing I ask myself when I find myself symptomatic is, have I, in a general way in my life, been doing more and more of the right things? Physically, mentally, emotionally, relationship, forgiveness, nutrition, exercise. Am I doing more of the right things? If I am, then that's tick number one that says, I'm in a healing crisis. I'm building my vitality by doing the right things. Second question I ask myself is, just before these symptoms came on, had I hit a new level of vitality? You know, if I was back at that level 5 vitality, then all of a sudden I hit a level 7.5. Now all of my level 7 toxicity can come to the surface to bubble out and be processed out. So if I say, yes, I hit a new level. Man, last night I went to bed. Man, I was higher than a kite. It's like, oh, man, I'm so glad I got this. I feel so great. And then you wake up the next morning and you're lower than a snake's bell and you say, what happened? I've been doing all the right things. Yeah, you hit a new level of vitality. Now you're able to process out those things that never belonged. Stay in willingness and let that energy move. You can get through it quickly. If people go into resistance and unwillingness, they can take something that took perhaps 2 minutes to develop, and they can still be in the throes of it 10 years later. Someone who stands in willingness, you know, there's something that took 10 years to develop, and in willingness, real full willingness, they can be through it in 2 minutes and they're done with it. So had I hit a new level of vitality? The third thing I ask myself is, what's happening with my elimination? In a healing process, there tends to be an increase in the output of the eliminative organs. We're talking about the bowel, the urinary tract, the skin, the mucous membranes, the sinuses, the lungs are all eliminative organs. There will tend to be an increase in elimination in a healing process. In a disease process, there's a tendency for there to be a restriction in elimination. So if there's an increase in elimination, okay, I've ticked the third box. This is a healing process. The fourth one, and this is one I observed from working with people in 12-step communities, and it's a really important one for people who are doing recovery-type work, because when we get into, like, let's say, for instance, what was shared earlier in the show about, gee, I was given this drug and, oh, I felt better and, oh, big change. You know, things are rocking now, but underneath the surface was, something's not right with this picture. There's something going on here that isn't right. Well, when I go back through, pardon me, and I open up in a healing process, literally, at least the energy signature, if not actual molecules of that particular drug, are still held in the tissue where the disease energy complex is. And when I'm able to start to metabolize and break up that energy process, I will start to release those molecules of that drug. And when that happens, that's oftentimes the time, you know, we've all heard about the alcoholic who just received his 30-year chip, man, he's been clean for 30 years, and all of a sudden we hear, oh my God, he fell off the wagon. Well, all the celebration that went with 30 years and all the accolades and all the vitality that came with it put him in a healing crisis. Now as his body reaches back and undoes, literally, at least energetic signatures, if not molecules of alcohol held locked in tissue, when they start to unwind, it's like, can't think of anything but alcohol. And so if I'm cognizant, I can start looking back at, when did this issue occur originally? And I can start to experience, oh yeah, that's when I use this in particular. You know, there's a young woman who was introduced to this work a little better than 40 years ago up in Michigan. And she did a little bit of it, and, you know, we kept in touch over the years. And then about, 4 or 5 years ago, she came back to forgiveness work, and she started to really dig in. She actually wrote about it in her book. She has a book called 21st Century Superhuman, and she writes quite a bit about forgiveness there. And she was doing worksheets every day. She was on the show very often sharing her process. You know, it's back there in the archives. And she would copy the shows and listen to them all day. I mean, she was really moving through things. And she was not a naturopath, but she was very naturopathically oriented. She actually wrote a book called Super Immunity, a book that, you know, you've probably seen on our tape table in the past. We carry it. And it's about how to use, you know, foods that you've got at home to combine them in a way that support immunity. And she called me one day, and she's like, Michael, I don't know what's going on. And she's a person, you know, in naturopathic circles, we oftentimes in a derogatory way refer to dairy as cow pus, because, you know, each state allows a certain amount of cow pus in their milk. It's like, you know, the legal limit. And, you know, it's not something, it's a congester, and it's not something that most people that eat a vegan diet, even touch. And she'd been vegan for years. And she called me in the middle of doing this work, and she's like, Michael, I don't know what's going on. I'm just eating ice cream by the quart. I just can't help it. I'm just so drawn, driven to eat ice cream. And she shared this, you know, on the show. She called into the show back several years ago as she was going through that process. And she had come from a family where her father was, and when she was a child, was somewhat abusive. And I said, and what's going on? And she said, well, I'm working through abusive issues with my father. And, you know, a little more conversation. It's like, well, when your father was, you know, now feeling sorry for the abuse that he'd done, what would he do to try to make it up to you? Oh, bingo. He'd take me out for ice cream. So as a child, when Dad wanted to make up for abuse, he'd take her out and treat her to ice cream, which, of course, sugar and all. Sugar's just another drug. And so once she became cognizant, oh, that's what's going on. Healing crisis. She's craving that old drug that was used initially to shut down whatever that symptom is. And so the fourth box to tick that confirms my symptoms are healing in process is, am I craving the drug that I used initially to shut down whatever this issue is? If I say yes to those four things, new level of vitality, enhanced elimination, doing the right things, and yes, there are these cravings, then I can rest assured that my symptoms are healing in process, and I want to keep doing the right things. I want to stay in willingness. I want to breathe. I want to engage in the forgiveness process, keep moving through that worksheet process to uncover the dissociated parts of the mind and come out the other side. So that's the naturopathic idea of healing crisis. Does that fit and make sense, Patrick?
That makes sense more than anything I've ever heard in my life.
Sweet, clear. And it's just unwinding. Go ahead.
Yeah. Me talk. I don't know if I have anything to say. I was just still instilling that and enjoying that. I'm just really glad you're doing the work you're doing.
So am I. And, you know, the symptoms, I mean, it will come right back to where people will find themselves. Let's say if they're healing an issue of abuse, they'll come back and they'll find themselves literally using the exact same word patterns as their power person used in abusing them. They'll find them turning those word patterns and those energies on someone else or on themselves. All kinds of crazy things can happen if you're in a healing process and you're not really conscious of it. Those energies can step in, take over again. That's when sometimes people go back to their addictive behaviors, and or they become conscious and aware and to a whole other level of awareness. And of course, one of the key things in the whole process is to have a significant amount of willingness. The deeper the willingness, the faster the energy is going to move. I don't know if you remember the first time that you came to Heartland, but you know, in the teaching center, in the classroom, when you would go out the side door, there was a set of steps that went down to an eating area outside. And you remember just to the right, there was a little kind of closet there. That's not there anymore now because they built out new bathrooms there. Thank you to Terry and David for that. But if you you might remember that we called that room, it was a place where we kept all the cleaning supplies, and it was called Cosmic Grease. And that's what we call willingness. It's the cosmic grease. Am I really willing to embrace these energetic patterns that don't feel good? And can I keep my field open and keep breathing? And the more I can do that, the faster I'm going to move through that healing crisis. In unwillingness, there'll be a tendency to prolong it.
I love it. It's kind of amazing to think some of the things I've come up with that I didn't understand the last year I think a year or two ago, I was dealing with one of the things I understand more about what I was dealing with is that the amount of pain I was in emotionally and the amount of pain I was in physically had put me into survival mode, which put me into my military sergeant McGann actions and automatic, and thought he was great because he's getting the job done and saving people and all this kind of stuff. But nobody could handle his personality. But when he was formatted, it was mostly over in Korea, and we lived in Kwansin huts that were metal. And when I'd go out in my Kwansin hut, behind, I have a, not a Kwansin hut, but a great big Kwansin type garage, much bigger than the things we lived in as far as height. But it was really cold, wintertime, and I found myself acting, because I never cursed till I went in the Army, but if you want to get along, every other word is a curse word. And I was out there, and I said, you know,
right.
I'm listening to myself talk out loud. It's just, it's like I'm back in the military. And this, what I realized was Sergeant McGann, that personality, didn't want to die. He didn't want me to cancel him out. He wanted me to let him express himself and be.
Word patterns.
It was just weird. You know, it was totally weird.
Yeah.
Found myself.
Right back to the actual word patterns.
Yeah, it was weird. And I found that that's helping me track now that healing crisis, and I didn't know it was, it's a low level. It's not like a big crisis, but it's a low level of the same thing has been going on, because I find that not around people, but by myself, I find myself cursing a lot. I'm thinking, why am I cursing? I don't understand. But it feels good.
Right back
good,
there.
Patrick.
Well, and in Korea, with all those guys around and all the stuff going on, you know, if they start a firefight, who's dead? That's survival, because it's your camaraderie with the people around you. So, yeah, I hear you loud and clear. And if you step into the mindset of being and of love, you know, just take a minute and imagine you're looking in a mirror at yourself, and you're holding yourself as a newborn and tapping into that pure presence of being in love. Take a minute, and when you're there, let me know.
Got to let go of a lot. Let me not let go, but let me just focus there. Okay.
So standing in that space of being, and we won't do it over the airwaves, but just think a curse word and pay attention to what happens to your energy field.
I couldn't do it. Not if I hold on to that.
You can't hold on to that.
Sure. Yeah,
it's totally disintegrated.
I can't hold on to that. Now,
exactly.
Now that I let go of that through our talking, I can curse again. But back then, I couldn't do it.
No.
Impossible.
It obliterates being. Their energies that obliterate being. And notice that in order to go into a battlefield and kill, you've got to obliterate being. Being can't kill people. Can't happen. It's all part of a brainwash that occurs. And engaging and forcing the engagement in hostility and fear so that one can kill. And you have to kill human life first.
Got a little energy moving there out of my chest.
Good.
I was very, very, very lucky. I went in to be a medic, and then they screwed me over, and I ended up saying I won't lead men to their death as an officer. They wanted me to be an officer, and they told me I could stay in special forces, not as a medic, but they needed officers, which was a lie. So I said I quit. You know, officer candidate school, because you're not trying to win the war and you're leading people to their death. And I came in here to save people's lives, not kill them. But I always, within my programming, knew that in a close end, if my life was challenged, I might take another life. Didn't want to. Thought I might do that, but that wasn't what I wanted to do. Then I ended up in Korea, and I ended up as a sergeant in the infantry, and we're in a hostile fire zone where three of our people went back to Vietnam to get out of my outfit. It wasn't a fun time.
Wow.
Yeah, really. So, what was I going to say? I think I got confused. Well, anyway,
that's
I remember
part of the healing process.
I remember knowing that I was being programmed, and it was all bullshit. That the North Koreans, the real people, and not the government, but the real people were great people, just like the South Koreans.
Just people.
And
yeah.
And the people who were coming through my line were captains or above in special forces before they got trained to come through the line. And they were the best they were. And they believed sincerely that we were raping and pillaging their cousins and their uncles and their aunts and really abusing the South Koreans that they were related to, that was their family. So they were, luckily for us, programmed to get through with information or do their damage down south, like kill the South Korean president. 36 of them went through to do that one time. They didn't fight us on the way through, only if they got trapped. And then if they did, all hell broke loose all the time. But I remember, maybe the Army will court-martial me for this. I remember seeing somebody in the fog, and I said, "Jung-gi," which means halt, right, in Korean. And the guy took off running, zigzagging left and right, and I couldn't draw a bead on him, thank God. He disappeared into the fog before I could shoot him. I was so thankful. Because I knew he's just a great guy, you know. I really appreciated what he was doing, what he was going through. He didn't know any better, you know. So like
another human being.
Tremendous. Yeah. A lot
Something
of them, I remember
not...
the 36 went through what they did when they got down south. They made it in 3 days, traveling night and day to Seoul, kill the president. And when they were on a area, some farmers, South Korean farmers, ran into them. They didn't hurt the farmers. They said, "We're here to save you. We're here to free you from the American tyranny." You know, and they were really, they were there to help everybody out from their heart. Yeah.
You know.
So, it's just so, really weird.
Yeah, it might be beneficial time to look up and just sit and breathe, get into a space and breathe and watch the movie Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, man. That's a heavy
that will
duty
probably
movie.
Put you, it's a heavy duty movie, but it will it'll put you into a whole other level of healing process around these issues.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
And we'll be here holding the space.
Thank you. I will get some support before I do that one again. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Well, but remember the key in Hacksaw Ridge was here's a young man who's there to do healing on the battlefield. He's not interested. He will not, even though they try to court-martial him, they threatened him. He's going to be put in Leavenworth for 10 years, and
right.
He will not touch a rifle or a weapon. True story.
Right.
People
yeah.
that he saved. So you might want to focus on the part, you know, let go of Captain McGann and focus on Patrick McGann, the man that went to the battlefield to be a medic and to do healing. And let that be your focus through watching that. It'll probably open up a whole different space in you for healing.
Well, you just did it.
And it's safe to feel the grief, and it's safe to feel the tears. And it's safe to allow yourself to restore to that gentle space of being that knew what life was about and knew that you were here, purpose of healing yourself and others. And you might send some of that energy to that man that ran off through the night and escaped. Who knows what he's carrying today yet? And there's a powerful principle in the Course in Miracles says, when you are healed, you are never healed alone. And it's time for this insanity to be healed on the earth.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you're very good at helping me get into my healing crisis and light up my stuff. Thank you.
Well, I'm here to support you, Patrick. I cherish you very deeply. And, you know, you've been a friend for a long, long time, and you are deep appreciated. 40-plus years at this point.
Thanks. An addendum to our conversation on healing process or healing crisis, and that is that post-healing crisis, one of the things that you will notice, and it will help you to recognize that you have been through a healing process, and my experience is that that becomes a great incentive for people to be willing or more willing when the next layer, the next level comes up, which might be more intense than the last. And that is, on the other side of it, you will notice that you're more vital, you're more alive, you're more awake, your intelligence is greater. For instance, I'll offer that, you know, when I was younger, well, I almost didn't survive my birth. Was almost dead 3 or 4 times the first several years of my life. Lived on inhalator and pills for decades, and spent the first 2 weeks of school every year as I was a kid in an oxygen tent in the hospital. Was never at school. And as I grew, of course, I lived in a culture that did drugs, coffee, not the other drugs, but coffee, sugar, caffeine, those sorts of things. And I was at the point where, you know, in the morning I would have my 4th cup of coffee and then I'd really start to be able to rock and would get up groggy and, you know, kind of the standard way our culture works. But what I noticed as I went through several layers of healing crisis is each time I had less desire or need for that addictive coffee and more vitality without it. My structure went back to where my adrenals provided my energy. I didn't need a stimulus to do it. So you just find more clarity, more power. Everything upgrades when you engage in a healing process. And this is also an indicator to be aware of when you're going to engage in something that supposedly is healing. If somebody hands you something and they tell you, well, this could cause this body part to drop off and that part to dysfunction and maybe this will go wrong, you know that you're not engaged in a healing substance. You're engaged in masking symptoms, which makes people feel better, but it doesn't do anything for healing. It creates degradation. When you engage in something that is truly healing, everything upgrades. Your intelligence, your strength, your vitality, your aliveness. It's easier to get up in the morning and you wake up earlier and earlier with more vitality and you don't need to be, you know, in bed till 10 o'clock or what have you. So that's just another piece to add to the puzzle of understanding and standing in the space of willingness to engage in a healing process.